The heavier of the two guards came forward.
Open your mouth.
Lexi followed one humiliating instruction after another. She opened her mouth, stuck out her tongue, lifted her breasts, coughed, wiggled her fingers, turned around and bent over.
Open your cheeks.
She reached back and held her butt cheeks open.
Okay, inmate Bale,
the guard said. Lexi straightened slowly and turned to the guard again. She couldn't look the woman in the eyes, so she stared at the dirty floor.
The guard handed her a stack of clothes, a pair of scuffed white tennis shoes, khaki pants and a shirt, a used white bra, and two pair of discolored underwear.
Lexi dressed as quickly as possible. The bra didn't fit right, and the underwear itched, and she needed socks, but of course, she said nothing.
Be careful who you hang around with, Bale,
the guard said in a voice that didn't match her gruff exterior. Lexi had no idea what to say to that.
Let's go,
the guard said, indicating the door. Lexi followed the woman out of the reception area and into the prison again, where the noise and the pounding and the catcall seemed deafening. She kept her eyes downcast and just followed, trying not to look around, feeling the floor literally shaking beneath her feet from the hundreds of women stomping on the cell block before her. Finally, they came to her cell, an 8x10 block of space hemmed on three sides by concrete walls and the fourth by a solid metal door that had a small window, probably so the guards could look inside. Inside there were two bunks with thin mattresses, a toilet, a sink, and a small desk. On the lower bunk sat a scrawny white girl with a cross tattooed on her throat. At Lexi's entrance, she looked up from her magazine. The door clanged shut behind her, but she could still hear the stomping and the catcalling going on in the cell block. She crossed her arms across her chest and stood there, shaking.
I got the bottom bunk,
the girl said. Her teeth were brown and ruined.
Okay.
I'm Cassandra.
Lexi saw now how young her cellmate was. The lines in her face and the circles under her eyes aged her, but Cassandra probably wasn't much past 23.
I'm Lexi.
This is receiving. We won't be cellmates for long. You know that, right?
Lexi didn't know anything. She stood there a minute longer. Then she climbed up onto her rickety bunk that smelled of other women's sweat. Lying on the coarse gray blanket, staring at the dirty gray ceiling, she couldn't help thinking of her mother, of that one terrible prison visit.
Here I am, Mom. Just like you, after all.
Chapter 16. Before the accident, Jude would have said she could handle anything, but grief had overwhelmed her. Intellectually, she knew it had to be dealt with somehow, and yet she couldn't imagine how to accomplish such a thing. She was like a swimmer in shallow water who saw a great white approaching. Her mind screamed swim, but her body just hung there, paralyzed. To everyone else, the so-called trial had been the end of the story. Justice was served. Now go back to your regularly scheduled program. Jude had felt pressure from everywhere to heal now. Instead, she'd gone gray. It was the only way to describe her life. A depression unlike anything she'd ever known or imagined descended. She could find nothing to look forward to, nothing to do. One by one, in the past 6 weeks, people had given up on her, and she hated that she'd disappointed her friends and family. But she couldn't care about it. Her feelings were either gone or buried in such a dense fog that they eluded her. Oh, sometimes she was normal. She might go to the store or drop something off at the post office. But she was always at risk of finding herself standing somewhere, in front of a row of plump purple eggplants, or holding a letter, with no memory of how she'd gotten there or what she needed. She'd gone to the store twice in her pajamas, and once she'd worn shoes that didn't match. The simplest tasks,
loomed like Mount Everest. Making dinner was beyond her. She cried at the drop of a hat and screamed out for her daughter in her sleep. Miles had gone back to work, as if it were completely normal to live with a frozen heart. She knew how much he was still hurting, and she ached for him, but he was already growing impatient with her. Zack hardly came out of his room. He'd spent the summer in his gaming chair, with his headphones on, killing animated enemies. They were doing their best, Zack and Miles, and they didn't understand why Jude couldn't pretend, why she couldn't go out for lunch with her friends or work in her garden, something. She saw how Miles looked at her in the evenings, over a dinner he'd brought home in styrofoam containers. He would say things like, "How are you today, honey?" What he really meant was, "When are you going to get over this and come back to me?" He thought that was the end game. For him, the memory of their daughter was already becoming a treasured family heirloom that you put on a high shelf behind a case of glass and took down once or twice a year, at birthdays or Christmas. You couldn't handle it too roughly or too often for fear it would break. It wasn't like that for her. She saw blank spaces everywhere, in an unused chair at the dinner table, in teen magazines that came addressed to Mia Faraday, in clothes left in a hamper. Mostly, she saw Mia in Zack, and it was unbearable. On good days, she could smile at her son, but there were so few good days, and on black days, when she couldn't get out of bed, she lay there thinking what a shitty mother she'd become. By August, she'd stopped doing almost everything. She had to remind herself to shower and wash her hair. The only time she even got out of bed was to welcome her husband home. And she saw the sadness in Miles's eyes when he looked at her then. She knew she was depressed. Miles kept asking her to see someone. He didn't understand how deep this new darkness in her ran, and how afraid she was to let go of it. She didn't want to get better. Really, she just wanted to be left alone. On the rare day when she even thought about trying, she told herself that Zack needed her, that Miles needed her, that she'd always thought of herself as a strong woman. But the words were like snapshots found in a drawer that showed a stranger's life, impossible to care about. Now, she and Miles were out on the back patio, pretending to be the couple they'd been before. Miles was in the lounge chair beside her, with his feet stretched out. In his lap lay an open newspaper, but she knew he wasn't really reading it. They all tended to avoid the news these days. There was always a story about drunk driving somewhere within the pages. She felt him looking at her, but she didn't meet his gaze. Instead, she counted the minutes until she could make some excuse and go back upstairs and crawl into bed. She was holding Mia's unset, unfinished ring in her hand. She did that a lot lately, just held it.
"You should put that away," Miles said.
There was a taint of irritation in his voice that had become familiar.
"And go on," Jude said. "Yeah, I know."
"This can't continue," he said, raising his voice. She was startled by the volume. "Save your surgeon voice for people who work for you."
"You're letting it drown you. Us."
"It." She finally turned to him. "Our daughter's death. So what, I'm overreacting? How disappointing for you."
Miles tightened his jaw.
"Enough. I'm not going to let you turn me into the bad guy who didn't love Mia enough because I can still somehow love my son and my wife. You need help. You need to start."
"Start what? Forgetting her?"
"Letting go. It's not healthy to keep hanging on to her. Zack needs you. I need you."
"And there it is, the real point. You miss your wife, so I better toe the line."
"Damn it, Jude. You know that's not what I'm saying. I'm afraid we're going to lose us."
Somewhere, deep inside, she felt the sting of that, and the truth of it. She felt a rare desire to explain, to try to make him understand. I went to Safeway last night, at midnight. I thought no one would be there. And I was right. I wandered around the aisles, just looking at stuff. When I ended up at the check stand, I had 4 tomatoes and 10 boxes of Lucky Charms. The cashier said, "Wow, you must have a lot of kids." I stared at her and thought, how many kids do I have? What do I say to people? 1, 2, 1 now? I ran out without paying. You're right. I need help. How about if I get some of it from you and you just back off?
I don't know how to back off. I'm scared as hell you're going to fill up your pockets with rocks and walk out into the water one day, like that stupid movie we saw.
I wish. See? See? He got to his feet.
All right, Jude. You want my help? I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to get us started.
He walked toward the sliding pocket doors and went into the house. She let out a relieved sigh and sank back into the chair. That was how all of their conversations seemed to go lately. Miles storming off, or walking away, or trying to cure her with a hug. None of it meant much to her. She stared down at Mia's stoneless ring, seeing the way the sunlight glanced off the prongs. Then it hit her. She knew what Miles was going to do to help her. It was something he'd mentioned often.
"You can't keep putting it off," he'd say,
as if grief were a train that needed to stay on schedule. With a cry, she flew out of her chair and ran up the stairs. Mia's door was open. She stumbled to a stop, frozen. She hadn't been able even to touch the doorknob in the weeks since that terrible night. She'd kept the door closed, as if not seeing the pink room would diminish her pain somehow. But now, Miles was in there, probably starting to box up her things.
"To give to other kids, Jude, children in need. Mia would want that."
She shrieked his name and ran for the open door, ready to scream at him, grab at him, claw at him. He was kneeling on the wheat-colored carpet, his head bowed, clutching the soft pink stuffed puppy that had once been their daughter's second best friend in the world, next to her brother.
"Daisy, doggy," he said thickly.
Jude remembered with a stunning clarity how much she loved this man and how much she needed him. She tried to think of what to say to him now, but before she found her voice, Zack came up beside her.
"What's all the—"
He saw his dad holding Daisy doggy, crying, and Zack started to back up.
"Zack," Miles said, wiping his eyes.
But Zack was already gone. Down the hall, a door slammed shut.
"We're losing him," Miles said quietly.
Slowly, as if his arm didn't quite work right, he put down the stuffed puppy. Jude heard the censure that had crept back into his voice, the blame he placed on her, and she felt weighed down by it. She backed away from him, out of the room that now had red and gold USC banners tacked to the walls. In the hall, she could be numb again. "We're all lost, Miles," she said. "You're the only one who doesn't get that." Before he could answer that, she went back downstairs and crawled into bed. Lexi now knew why her lawyer had wanted her to plead not guilty. Prison was a place where women beat each other up for a hand-rolled cigarette. You had to be careful every second. The wrong look at the wrong woman could literally get you killed. She was afraid all of the time, and when she wasn't afraid, she was irritated. Her temporary cellmate, Cassandra, had turned out to be a crystal meth addict who would do anything for drugs and moaned all night in her sleep. Lexi had spent the first 4 weeks dodging the big, mean women who ran the drug trades. She spoke to no one. Today, though, she had something to look forward to. It was visiting day. Lexi knew it was wrong to make Eva come up all this way, and she wished she were strong enough to tell her not to come. But she couldn't. It was so damned lonely here. Eva's visits were the only good thing left in her life, the only hour all week to which she looked forward. She spent all morning counting the minutes, listening to Cassandra puke in their lidless steel toilet. When the guard showed up to take Lexi to the visitor's room, she practically leaped up. Following instructions precisely, she made her way through the various doors, past the inspections, and into the big, windowed room where family and friends came to visit. There, she found an empty table and sat down, tapping her foot nervously on the floor. Guards were stationed around the room, watching everything, but other than that, it almost looked like a school cafeteria. Finally, Eva came through the door. She looked smaller and older, with her gray hair frizzing out around her pleated face. As always, she'd looked uncomfortable in here, out of place.
"Over here, Aunt Eva,"
Lexi said, raising her hand as if she were a high school girl again. Eva shuffled forward. At the table, she stopped suddenly and kind of collapsed into the chair. "Lord, help me," she said, pressing a hand to her chest. "You'd think I was the criminal."
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, I didn't mean that. It was just an ordeal getting in today. Something must be up, that's all. How are you?" She reached across the table and patted Lexi's hand, smiling brightly. "How are you this week?" Lexi didn't mean to grab her aunt's hands, but she couldn't help herself. It felt so good to touch someone. The depth of her need surprised her. She was so hungry for conversation, for connection, that she launched into a review of the book she'd read this week, and she told Eva all about her job in the laundry. In turn, Eva told her about the 4th of July decorations at Walmart and the weather in Port George. It wasn't until Lexi had run out of news that she really looked at her aunt, and that was when she saw the changes. It had only been a month, but Lexi's incarceration, and probably these visits, had left a mark on Eva's face. Her wrinkles were deeper, her lips thinner. She had to keep clearing her throat, as if it hurt to speak. Once Lexi had seen all that, she couldn't unsee it. She understood all at once how selfish she'd been to this woman who had never been anything but kind. "Have you started taking college courses yet?" Eva asked, pushing the fuzzy hair out of her eyes.
"No. You can get a degree in here, just like you planned.
I think ex-cons have a hard time getting into law school." Lexi slumped back in her chair, feeling defeated now, alone. She'd been through this kind of thing before, back when she'd been in the care of strangers. She'd waited and waited to see her mom, only to be heartbroken again and again. Sometimes, the only way to survive was to stop hoping, stop waiting. Eva had been there for Lexi in a way that no one else ever had. "We're family," Eva had said to her on that day, so long ago now, when they'd first come together, and it had become the truth. Now, it was Lexi's turn. If she didn't release Eva now, her aunt would stay here, connected to this terrible place by a string of uncomfortable visiting days.
"You should go to Florida," she said quietly.
Eva stopped. Had she been saying something?
"What do you mean? I can't leave you."
Lexi leaned forward, grasped Eva's hands across the table. "I'm going to be in here for more than 5 years. You'll be almost 70 by then. And I know how much you want to live with Barbara. This rainy weather is so hard on your knees. You deserve to be happy, Eva, really."
"Don't say that, Lexi."
Lexi swallowed hard. She knew what she had to do. Eva would have to be forced to let go.
"I won't see you again, Eva. It won't do you any good to come back."
"Oh, Alexa."
It was all in that softly spoken name. The regret, the disappointment, the loss. And it hurt to hear all of it. Mostly it hurt to know that she was pushing away the only person in the world who loved her. But it was for Eva's own good. And wasn't that what love was supposed to be?
When I get out, I'll come to Florida, Lexi said.
I won't let you do this, Eva said, her eyes filling with tears.
No, I won't let you do this, Lexi said. Give me this, Eva, please. Let me do this for you. It's all I can do.
Eva sat there a long time. Then finally, she wiped her eyes.
I'll write every week.
Lexi could only nod.
And I'll send pictures.
They kept talking, both of them trying to say everything that was needed, building up a store of words that would keep them warm come winter. But finally, the time was over, and Eva got to her feet. She looked even older now, more tired. And Lexi knew she'd done the right thing. How would Eva age if she came to this hellhole once a month?
Goodbye, Alexa, Eva said.
Lexi stood there, nodding.
Thanks for...
Her voice broke. Eva pulled her into a hug and held on to her tightly.
I love you, Alexa, she said.
Lexi was shaking when she drew back.
I love you too, Eva.
Eva looked at her through shiny eyes.
And you remember this. I knew your mama. You are nothing like her, you hear me? And don't you let this place change that.
And then she left. Lexi stood there for as long as she could see her aunt. Finally, she left the visitor's room and returned to her cell. She hadn't been there for more than 40 minutes when a guard came and stood in the open doorway.
Bale, get your things.
Lexi scooped up her few belongings, toiletries, letters, photographs, and put them in a small box. Then she followed the guard into the main section of the prison. All around her, women were stomping their feet and calling out to her. In the steel and concrete prison, the noise was thunderous. Lexi didn't look up, just kept her belongings pressed to her chest and her eyes downcast. The guard stopped suddenly. The cell door in front of them buzzed loudly, clicked, and opened. The guard stepped aside.
Inside, Bale. This is your permanent cell.
Lexi stepped around the guard's bulky body and peered into the cell that would probably be her home for the next 5.5 years. Inside, the walls were plastered with photographs and drawings and magazine ads. A heavyset woman sat on the lower bunk, her broad shoulders slumped forward, her thick, heavily tattooed arms resting on her bent knees. She had long, ropey strands of gray-black hair and dark skin. Moles dotted her cheeks, and tattoos curled around her throat. The door clanged shut behind her.
I'm Lexi, she said,
having to clear her throat before she had enough confidence to add,
Bale.
Tamika,
the woman said, and Lexi was surprised by the pretty sound of her voice. Hernandez.
Oh.
My kid's about your age, Tamika said, heaving her considerable bulk off the narrow bed.
It was concrete and steel. No springs pinged at the movement. She moved forward, pointed to a tattered, worn photograph taped to the concrete block wall.
Rosie. I was pregnant with her when I got in here. Didn't know it, though.
Tamika crouched down by the toilet and rolled a cigarette. As she smoked, she exhaled into the vent on the wall.
You got any pictures?
Lexi put down her box of belongings and sat next to Tamika on the cold floor. She picked up a few photographs from the pile.
This is my Aunt Eva, and this is Zach.
She stared down at his senior picture. She touched it all the time. Already it felt as if she were starting to forget him, and that terrified her.
And this is Mia, the girl I killed.
Tamika took the picture of Mia, studied it.
Pretty girl. Rich?
Lexi frowned.
How'd you know that?
You're here, ain't you?
Lexi wasn't quite sure how to answer that. The question seemed to imply facts that weren't quite true, or that she hadn't really seen before.
I killed my husband,
Tamika said, indicating a picture on the wall.
Self-defense? Lexi said.
It was something you heard about a lot in here. She seemed to be the only guilty person in prison.
Nah, killed the fucker in his sleep.
Oh.
I've been here so long now I can hardly remember the bad shit I'd done.
Tamika put out the cigarette and hid the unsmoked half inside of her mattress.
Well, I guess we might as well talk, get to know each other.
She looked at Lexi, and in those dark eyes, there was a knowledge that made Lexi uncomfortable.
We got time, you and me, and I could use a friend.
When will you get out?
Me?
Tamika smiled slightly.
Never.
On a Wednesday in late August, Zack emerged from his bedroom looking disheveled and a little disoriented. His short hair was dirty and spiky. His t-shirt had a big stain across the front. Jude and Miles were in the great room, staring at the TV, though neither was watching. They hadn't spoken in more than an hour. When Zack walked into the room, Jude's heart ached at the sight of him. If she weren't so exhausted, she would have gone to him, maybe asked how he was. But she hadn't slept in weeks, and even the merest movements were beyond her. She'd lost 15 pounds this summer, and the loss left her looking skeletal and wan.
I'm going to USC,
he said without preamble. Miles rose slowly.
We've talked about this, Zack. I don't think that's a good idea. It's too soon.
It's what she would want, Zack said.
And with that, the air seemed to suck out of the room, leaving them all breathless. Miles sank back to the sofa.
Are you sure?
Sure? Zack said, his voice dull.
It's what I'm doing, okay?
Jude stared at her son, seeing the salmon patch of new skin along his jaw. Blue veins in his cheeks looked like cracked lines in aged porcelain. He was this big, broad-shouldered kid who's been whittled down by grief. How could she tell him to stay here, in this place that seemed to have died?
Okay, she said at last.
For the next few days, Jude made a Herculean effort to act like her old self. She wasn't that woman, of course, but she wanted this one time to think about her son instead of her daughter. In the old days, only months ago now, a lifetime, she would have thrown a huge good-luck-in-college party slash going away for her kids. Now, it took everything inside of her to invite a few friends over to say goodbye to Zack. Honestly, she didn't even want to do even that, but Miles had insisted. On the big day, she took a shower and washed and dried her hair. When she looked in the mirror, she was surprised by the thin, fragile-looking face that stared back at her. Too many sleepless nights had left dark circles under her eyes, and even in this final week of August, after a long, hot summer, she was as pale as chalk. She brought out her makeup kit and went to work, and by 11, when the doorbell rang, she looked almost like her old self.
They're here,
Miles said, coming up behind her. He slipped his arms around her waist and kissed the side of her neck.
Are you ready?
Sure,
she said, forcing a smile. In truth, she felt a fluttering of panic, the thought of people around her, of having to pretend she was okay, getting over it, moving on, made her hyperventilate. Miles took her by the hand and led her down the hall to the front door. Molly and Tim stood on the front porch. Both were smiling just a little too brightly. They had come bearing food, with their kids in a group behind them.
The freezer was already full of foil-wrapped food that people had brought after the accident. Jude couldn't look at any of it, couldn't eat a bite of it. Just the sight of foil made her queasy.
"Hey, guys," Miles said, stepping aside to let them in. "It's good to see you."
Instead of welcoming them, Jude crossed her arms and glanced out at her garden. Prickly, ugly weeds grew everywhere. Her once beloved plants seemed to be climbing over one another in a rush to leave their confinement. She heard her mother's voice and turned her back on the sound. The last thing she needed now was the pretense of their relationship.
"How are you, Judith? Really?"
"Jude?"
Jude blinked and saw Molly standing beside her. Had she been talking?
"I'm sorry," she said. "Senior moment. What did you say?"
Molly and Miles exchanged worried glances.
"Come on, honey,"
Molly said, putting an arm around her. Jude let her friend sweep her up like a warm tide and carry her into the front room, where a Good Luck Zack banner hung across the mantel. Miles put music on the stereo, but at the first song, Sheryl Crow singing "The First Cut is the Deepest," he snapped it off and turned on the television instead. The Seahawks were playing football. One by one, Zack's friends filed into the house. They took up space, these boys and girls she'd known for so long. She'd been with most of them since kindergarten. She'd fed them and driven them to and from events, and even occasionally advised them. Now, like Zack, they were getting ready to leave the safety of the island and go off to college. Minus one. Miles came up beside Jude, touched her arm.
"Is he going to come down?"
She looked up at him, and in his eyes she saw the same thought that dogged her. The old Zack would never have been late to his own party.
"He said he would. I'll go get him," she said.
She nodded and left, realizing too late that she'd just walked away from Molly. She should have excused herself. Honestly, it was hard to remember things like that these days. At Zack's closed door, she reached into her pocket, always full now of aspirin, and she chewed one. The terrible taste actually helped. Then she knocked on the door. There was no answer, so she knocked again, harder, and said, "I'm coming in." He was slumped in his gaming chair, wearing headphones, and wielding a controller like a fighter pilot. On the TV screen in front of him, a remarkably realistic tank rolled down a barren hillside, gun blazing. She touched his head, gave it a little scratch. He leaned into her hand, and she wondered how long it had been since she'd touched him. With that thought came the loss again, the grief, and the guilt.
"What are you doing?"
"Trying to beat this level."
"Your friends are here to say goodbye," she finally said.
"Yeah," he said, sighing.
"Come on," she said.
They went downstairs together, saying nothing. In the living room, there was a moment of silence as they entered, awkward and uncomfortable. How could this ever be a celebration, really? Then Zack's friends came up to him, smiling uncertainly, talking quietly. Jude stood back. She was trying like hell to stay present, to stay in this moment that mattered to her son. But it hurt so much. She should have expected it, should have known she couldn't celebrate Zack's journey to college, to USC, without also mourning the fact that he was going alone. She stayed as long as she could, smiled more than she would have thought possible. She even cut the cake and asked Miles to make a toast. But long before the day turned to early evening, she slipped down the hallway and hid in her dark office. How could she go to USC, say goodbye to her son, and not be overwhelmed with grief? USC was Mia's school. Everyone knew that. Her bedroom walls were studded now with red and gold SC paraphernalia. The worst part which she would never admit to anyone, was that she wanted him gone. Every time she looked at him, she broke all over again. Without him, she could just do nothing, be nothing. Feeling a little shaky, she went to the sofa and sat down.
"You can run, but you can't hide," someone said, and the lights came on.
Molly stood there, holding a plate of lemon bars. She took one look at Jude and rushed to the couch, sitting down beside her.
"Breathe, honey. In and out. In and out."
"Thanks," Jude said when the panic subsided. "I don't want to set you off again, but your mother's looking for you."
"Reason enough to hide out."
"I don't know what to say to you anymore, Jude, but I'm here. You know that, right?"
"I know it."
Molly's gaze was steady, worried.
"You can call me any time. I know how hard it will be on you when Zack is gone."
Gone. The word was like the flick of a knife. Zack was leaving. Mia was gone. She forced a smile. The only way to stop a conversation like this was to pretend she was okay.
"Yes. Well, I better go see my mother before she decides to redecorate."
She reached for a lemon bar, which she had no intention of eating, but it was the polite thing to do. The normal thing. The next day, she and Miles and Zack set off for the airport. It should have been a joyous occasion. Each of them tried to pretend. Miles made inane conversation and stupid jokes all the way to SeaTac. On the airplane, they pretended not to notice the empty seat in the aisle next to Miles. Before, they'd always sat two and two. Now they filled up a row themselves, the three of them. At the college, they walked around in the hot California sunshine, remarking on the beauty and elegance of the campus. Throughout the weekend, Grief, always elastic, stretched out and snapped back, surprising them with its force at the oddest times. Seeing a blonde girl in a black vest, seeing a girl in a pink sweater do a cartwheel on the grass, hearing Zack's roommate ask about sisters or brothers. But they made it through. On Sunday night, they had a last family dinner at Mastro's Steakhouse in Beverly Hills, and then took Zack back to his dorm room. There, Jude saw the decorations on Zack's roommate's side, posters and family pictures and a quilt made by the kid's mom. It occurred to her then, too late, that she should have shopped for Zack, filled this room with everything he would need to succeed at school. The old Jude would have moved him in with boxes and boxes.
"We'll miss you," Jude said, trying not to cry.
"Call your mother," Miles said gruffly. "Keep in touch."
Zack nodded and hugged his dad. When he drew back and looked at Jude, she saw the uncertainty and shame in his eyes.
"I'll do well, Mom. You don't have to worry about me."
Jude pulled him into her arms and held him as tightly as she could. Her shame and guilt were almost unbearable. She wanted to tell him how much she loved him, but the words that had once come so easily were impossible to form now. He held her for a long time, and then slowly they drew apart.
"Goodbye," Zack said quietly.
It all came down to that one word. Goodbye. Once you said it out loud, it was real.
"Bye, Zack," Jude said softly.
She and Miles walked out of his dorm room into the busy hallway. Behind them, his door quietly clicked shut.
Goodbye.
Chapter 17. That fall, time seemed alternately to fly forward and to crawl. With Zack gone, the house was as quiet as a tomb. Miles worked longer hours than ever. Jude knew he was afraid to come home to her. He hated how far she'd fallen into the gray.
But now it was November, Thanksgiving weekend, and Zack was home. She'd promised Miles and herself that she would make a real effort for her son. She wanted that. At least her mind wanted it, and she was determined for once to act like a mother. And so she had come up here, to the attic above the garage. Now she stood in front of the red and green boxes that contained their Christmas decorations. What had she been thinking? How could she hang 3 stockings on the mantel, or hold the lifesaver and white yarn ornament Mia had made in kindergarten? How? She turned her back on all of it and headed for the door. By the time she got back into the house, her hands were shaking and she was cold. She never should have told Miles she'd decorate, but the sadness in Zack's eyes had filled her with guilt. She thought that decorating for Christmas might cheer him up. He'd been so depressed all week. He claimed that school was going well, that he had great grades, and even swore that med school was still his future. But he was so quiet that sometimes she forgot he was even home. He never answered his cell phone, and after a while, it had stopped ringing. She moved into the living room. Sunlight shone through the tall windows, gilding the wooden floors. Zack and Miles sat next to each other on the big, overstuffed sofa, both wielding controllers, while 2 ninjas kickboxed each other on the big flat-screen TV.
"You find the ornaments?"
Miles said, without looking up.
"No."
Miles sighed. Lately, he was always sighing. So was she, for that matter. Their whole relationship seemed to be made of air, filled with nothing. She wanted to make him happy, but she couldn't find any way to say what he needed to hear. The doorbell rang and she was relieved. She hated guests, but anything was better than this retread conversation about who she used to be. "Are we expecting anyone?"
"Hardly. People don't drop by anymore," Miles said.
"Maybe it's Drew or Greg," Jude said, steeling herself to see one of Zack's friends. She went to the door and opened it. A stranger stood there, holding a manila envelope. No, not a stranger, but she couldn't place his face. "Hello?"
"I'm Scott Jacobs. Lexi Bales, defense attorney." "Come in, Mr. Jacobs," Miles said, appearing beside Jude.
She felt herself being pushed aside. She heard the door shut. Feeling lightheaded, she followed the men into the living room.
"I came to speak to Zachary," the lawyer said,
and at his name, Zack put down the controller and stood.
"I have these papers from Lexi. She asked me to deliver them to you, personally. She thought you would be home this weekend."
He didn't look at Jude, just Zack, and offered the envelope.
"She's pregnant,"
he said quietly. How long did she stand there, staring? She could feel the blood moving in her veins, pounding on the walls of her heart. A high-pitched scream filled her head. No, she was making that sound. Was that really her? The anger she'd spent months suppressing came roaring back. Zack was talking, saying something, but Jude didn't hear the words. She didn't care anyway.
"Get out of this house," she said suddenly.
Yelled.
"I'm sorry,"
Scott said.
"Sorry? Sorry? Your client kills my daughter, but that's not enough for her, is it? She's not done with us. Now she has to ruin my son's life, too. How do we even know Zack is the father? How far along is she?"
"Mom," Zack said sharply. Miles looked shaken and pale, but the anger Jude felt was nowhere to be seen in his eyes. That pissed her off even more. She was always alone in her feelings lately, always wrong.
"She's 5 and a half months pregnant," Scott answered.
"How convenient! What is in the envelope? What does she want from Zack?"
"These are adoption papers, Mrs. Faraday, and I can tell you that Lexi did not come to this decision easily. If
Zack doesn't want the baby. She's prepared to undergo the adoption process alone. She'll find a good family. She doesn't want her baby to be in foster care.
If Zack doesn't want the baby? Jude said, incredulous. He's 18 years old, for God's sake. He can't remember to wash his clothes.
She hated foster care, Zack said quietly.
Scott nodded.
She doesn't want that for her baby.
Jude couldn't make sense of all of this. There seemed to be some undercurrent pulling at her, swirling around her, but she couldn't see a ripple.
Where's a pen? Jude said tightly. Judith, Miles said, using his reasonable voice, the one that meant she was being a bitch or a shrew or whatever. She couldn't care less. She was sick to death of his reasonableness. The pain in her heart right now was all-consuming, unbearable. It took every scrap of control she possessed not to howl in agony.
This is our grandchild we're talking about. We can't be cavalier.
You think I'm being cavalier? Jude stared at her husband, hating him as much as she'd ever hated anyone. You think it's not tearing me up inside? You think I haven't dreamed of my first grandchild? But not like this, Miles. A child by the girl who killed our Mia? No, I won't.
Stop, Zack said loudly.
Jude had forgotten he was even there. I'm sorry, Zack. I know this is terrible, tragic, but you need to listen to me.
When have I ever done anything but listen to you? He said.
She heard the anger in his voice and stepped back from it. What are you saying, Zack?
It's my baby, Zack said firmly. Mine and Lexi's. I can't just turn my back on that. How can you want me to?
Jude felt the floor beneath her open up, and suddenly she was falling. She saw his whole sad future in a flash. No college degree, no decent job, no falling in love with the right girl and starting fresh in life. At that, her last desperate hope that he would someday climb out of this pit and learn to be happy again disappeared.
I'll be a dad, Zack said. I'll quit school and come home.
Jude couldn't breathe. How could this be happening? Zack, she pleaded, think about your future.
It's done, Mom, he said firmly. Will you guys help me?
Of course we'll help, Miles said.
You can stay in school. We'll find a way.
Scott cleared his throat, and the three of them looked at him.
Lexi thought Zack would feel this way, or maybe she hoped. Anyway, she has also had me draft custody papers. She's prepared to give Zack full custody. She's asked for only two things from you. She doesn't want her child to know that she's in prison. Ever. She actually suggested that you tell the baby she died.
He paused, looked at Zack.
And she wants to hand you the baby herself, Zack. Only to you. So you'll need to be at the hospital when she gives birth.
Jude knew better than to say anything to that. Instead, she turned sharply on her heel and walked out of the room. Upstairs she took four sleeping pills and crawled into bed. As she lay there, trembling, praying for the pills to work, she tried to think about a baby, this baby, her grandchild. She tried to picture a tiny version of Mia, with hair like corn silk and eyes like green marbles. How could she look at a baby like that and ever feel anything but her own loss? Lexi was in the prison cafeteria when the first labor pain hit. She grabbed Tamika's wrist, squeezing hard.
Oh my God, Lexi said when it was over. Is that what it's going to be like?
Worse.
Tamika led her across the crowded cafeteria to one of the guards positioned by the door.
The kid's going into labor.
The guard nodded, radioed the news to someone else,
and then told them to go back to their cell.
Someone will come for you, Bale.
Lexi let herself be led down to her cell. There, she curled up on Tamika's lower bunk and made it through the rising pain. Tamika stroked her hair and told her silly stories about her life. Lexi tried to listen and be polite, but the pains were sharper and coming faster now.
I can't take it. How do women take it?
Bale?
She heard her name through this fog of pain. When the cramp ended, she looked up groggily. Miriam Youngo, the prison doctor, was there.
I hear there's a baby who wants to come out and play.
Drugs, Lexi said. Give me drugs.
Dr. Youngo smiled.
How about if I examine you first?
Yeah, Lexi said. Whatever.
Lexi hardly paid attention to all the things that happened next. It was probably just as well. There was the pelvic exam that any prisoner walking past the cell could see, the strip search and receiving, to make sure that she wasn't trying to sneak something out of the prison in her vagina, ha, and the reshackling of her wrists and ankles. She didn't relax until she was lying in the gurney in the back of an ambulance, shackled to the bed's metal rails.
Can Tamika come with me? Please? I want her at the hospital, Lexi said between pains.
No one answered her, and when the next pain hit, she forgot everything else. By the time she got to the hospital, her pains were coming so fast, it was like being in the ring with a prizefighter. She was in a private hospital room, with guards stationed both inside and outside of the room. She wanted to roll over, or walk, or even just sit up, but she couldn't do any of that. She was shackled to the guardrails of the bed on the left side, one ankle and one wrist. And they wouldn't give her drugs because it was too late for that, whatever the hell that meant. Another pain hit, the worst one yet. She screamed out, her belly tightening so hard she thought she was going to die. When the pain abated, she tried to sit up.
Get a nurse or doctor in here, please. Something's wrong. I can tell. It hurts too much. Please.
She was panting now, trying not to cry.
My job isn't...
Please, Lexi begged. Please.
The guard looked at Lexi. Her eyes narrowed. Lexi wondered what the woman saw. A murderer chained to a bed. Or an 18-year-old girl giving birth to a baby she'd probably never know.
I'll check, the guard said, and left the room.
Lexi fell back into the pillows. She tried to be strong, but she had never felt so alone. She needed Aunt Eva here, or Tamika, or Zach, or Mia. Another pain ripped through Lexi. She strained against the restraints, felt the cold metal bite into her wrist and ankle. Then, it was over. Sagging back into the pillow, she exhaled. Her whole body felt wrung out. She touched her belly. She could feel her baby in there, wriggling, probably trying to find her way out of this pain.
It's okay, little girl. We'll be okay.
She squeezed her eyes shut, trying to imagine the baby inside of her. For months now, as she'd lain in her lonely prison bed, she'd dreamed of this baby, and in her dreams, it was always a girl. When the pain came again, she cried out, certain this time that her stomach was going to split open like that scene in Alien. She was still screaming when the doctor came into the room, with a nurse beside him.
Chained to the bed? Where are we? Medieval France? Uncuff her. Now.
I'm sorry, doctor, but I can't do that, the guard said.
To her credit, she actually looked sorry.
Hello, Lexi. I'm Dr. Farst, he said, coming to her bedside.
Hi, she said. I think I'm dying. Do they ever rip you in half?
He smiled.
It just feels that way. I'm going to examine you now.
Okay.
He pushed her gown aside and positioned himself between her legs.
Can you see her yet? Ah!
Lexi arched up in pain again.
Okay, Alexa, It looks like someone is ready to be born. When I say push, you bear down as hard as you can.
Lexi was so tired she could hardly move. What does that mean, bear down?
Like you're constipated and trying to go.
Oh.
Okay, Alexa, push.
Lexi strained and pushed and screamed. She lost track of how many times the doctor told her to stop and start and stop again. She hurt so badly she could hardly stand it, and she wished someone were beside her, telling her she was okay, that she was doing great. That was how it happened in the movies. And then, a baby cried.
It's a girl,
the doctor said with a smile. Lexi had never known before that a heart could take flight, but that was how she felt suddenly. The pain was gone, already forgotten, and angels were lifting her up. She saw the doctor hand the baby, her baby, to the nurse, and she couldn't help reaching out to hold her. One arm lifted, the other clanged against the restraint.
Uncuff her wrist,
the doctor said to the guard, pulling off his blue surgical cap.
Now.
But,
Dr. Farce turned to the guard. In this room, I'm God. Take off the cuff. Leave the ankle if you have to. That should keep society safe from this teenager.
He walked over to the bed.
You're young, he said.
It meant he thought she had lots of time ahead of her, that someday she'd be in a room like this, giving birth to a child that she would bring home and love, that someday she would nurse her own child. She could have told him that he was wrong, that she wasn't young anymore, and that dreams were ephemeral things like balloons that once loosed disappeared into the sky above you. But he was so nice, and she was tired, and she didn't want to look truth in the face right now. The nurse came up beside her, handed Lexi a tiny bundle wrapped in pink. Her daughter.
I'll leave you two alone for a minute. I know there are people waiting.
There was an awkward moment when Truth muscled its way into the room, and then the nurse and doctor left. Lexi stared down at her baby in awe, mesmerized by her little pink face and her bow-shaped lips, by her muddy blue eyes that seemed to know secrets that Lexi hadn't yet learned. Lexi reached down and touched a grape-sized fist. I have so much to say to you, little girl, but you won't remember it. You won't remember me, but I'll remember you. Lexi held her daughter close, gave her all the love she had inside of her, hoping to imprint her in a way that would last. Like geese, she whispered into the tiny shell-pink ear. Their babies imprint on the mama in the first sighting, and never forget.
There was a knock at the door. The guard answered, spoke to someone in the hallway outside, and then opened the door. Scott walked in. He was as rumpled as always, in a cheap wool suit and an out-of-date tie, but the look in his eyes was so caring and compassionate that she felt the start of panic. She instinctively tightened her hold on her baby. Hey, Lexi, he said. At the red mark on her wrist, he frowned. They shackled you? It's okay, she said. Look.
Scott leaned down.
She's beautiful, Lexi.
At the words, his face seemed to kind of fall.
It's time, he said gently.
He's here? She asked, and even with all the pain that she knew was coming, her heart skipped a beat.
He's right outside.
Help me sit up, would you, Scott? He helped her get positioned, then drew back.
You sure you want to do this?
What choice do I have?
You don't have to give up full custody, that's for sure. When you get out...
Look at her, Lexi said, staring down at this beautiful girl. She'll be loved by them. She'll feel loved. She'll feel safe.
She'll have all the things I can't give her.